How very unlike OTP that was.
Yeah, it needed to restart my headphone output, apparently.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to Beam Radio.
Welcome to Beam Radio. I'm your host, Lars Wikman, and today I have with me my fabulous co-host, Bruce Tate.
Hello from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
And before we introduce our special guest, we will just briefly go through our and thank our sponsors. Now, I will thank my own company, which is kind of awkward, so I'll stick to it. Actually, we do have a slogan, and I don't think I've ever said it. Mostly functional programming is what it says on our shirts, which I think is probably a slogan I should use more. Undergjort, mostly functional programming. And yes, you can read that both ways. But moving on to our OG sponsor, Groxio. Bruce, what's happening at Groxio?
Yeah, we're fast and furious preparing for Gig City Elixir, and that's going to be in mid-May. Very excited. We've added you and Andrea to the lineup, so we're excited about that.
Very exciting. All right. Without further ado, this special guest was one I ran into during ElixirConf EU, and I had no idea who he was when I was there at the speaker's dinner. It was right next to me, and he's probably the one whose work I'm like most familiar with in some ways. Took a moment before we found like the connection points, and I started asking him how I knew him online. And if you've ever seen like a monochrome avatar and the name Lost Cobra Kai on, you know, the Elixir forum, the Elixir Slack, I think the Elixir Discord probably. He's everywhere. Welcome to the show, Benjamin Milde.
Hi.
I'm irrationally excited to have this conversation. I've seen your icons everywhere. And, you know, in the Elixir kind of learning, training, support, writing, blogging, There's so many facets of that, but your work is absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I try to do my best. It's really, it takes certainly a bunch of time to be active in so many places. But on the other hand, like, it's essentially how I got into Elixir as well. So like, it's not just that I'm teaching other people, but it's also that I'm learning, and I'm still learning a lot from these conversations.
Yeah, and I will say, during ElixirConf, I think we were a small crew of people who got acquainted and who convinced you that your avatar needed to be at the start of your talk. And I'll just say that when you switched to that slide and explained that you were a Lost Cobra Kai, you got applause and basically a standing ovation, which I think is kind of indicative of the level of familiarity. Like, everyone who was in the room had probably run into you online. They, like, you've probably solved a problem for almost every Elixir developer out there. First, specifically the person you're trying to help, and then everyone else who ends up looking at that answer, which is like, it's a very important part of building a software community these days, especially like languages and frameworks. Like, coming up, I learned everything online and essentially very few things from kind of formal courses and trainings or like structured materials. 90% of it is like figuring out what's wrong. Like, why doesn't it work?
And, yeah, indeed. It's certainly the same for me. It's like, before I did Elixir, I was working in like a small niche PHP CMS, which essentially, like, small niche PHP CMS already tells you there's like hardly any documentation, hardly any people using it. But essentially, the way I got used to it, and I built a first version of a project that I'm still nowadays running on Elixir in that CMS. And how I got that working is essentially just being on the forum asking questions, because that's the only place where you could essentially get answers for this thing, because there was hardly any documentation at the time I started. Nowadays it's a little better, but not much, especially not compared to Elixir level standards. And so essentially talking to people is the option of, okay, how do I get X done? And then you might be lucky and have someone answer of like, okay, yeah, maybe you can look at this. And I mean, you can always look at the source code, but like part of the reason why you need to talk to people in my mind is, yes, you can read the source code, but the source code won't help you at the start to get running with something. Like the same happened when I then eventually got into Elixir. I barely knew SQL. I wasn't really a backend dev at all. And through all the conversations and stuff on Slack, on the forum, I learned so much stuff that was my entry into Elixir, especially at the time when there wasn't really formal trainings and stuff like that. It's just being active in the community, learning what other people are doing, what they're talking about, and then learning by experiencing, I guess. And
how did
eventually
you end up finding Elixir?
That's actually quite funny, because it was really happenstance. Given I was doing PHP, eventually, once I was a little bit better in PHP, I started watching Laracasts and getting to know a little bit of the Laravel community. And I was following, who's the guy from Tailwind?
Adam Wathen.
Adam Wathen, yes. And he once did a random stream where he tried out Elixir. And that's how I got to know Elixir. I found it really interesting. I really liked the idea of functional programming from just his like trial runs of what he can do with the language. This stream was also him trying Elixir for the first time. So really, like, he wasn't selling it. He was just trying to make stuff happen.
Interesting, yeah.
And I got interested in that, and like over time got more and more into Elixir, learning stuff, figuring out how to do stuff in a functional programming language compared to PHP, finding out that PHP really sucks for anything stateful. And that it's not inherently a problem of programming, but there's actually solutions out there. And then eventually, like I already mentioned, I have one project that's still running from that time. I mean, in a later iteration, eventually I decided, okay, yeah, like we had this project running on this PHP CMS, which really, like, it was essentially a small scale software as a service thing, which we tried to grow out. It didn't grow much, but our usage of it grew at least. And the CMS part eventually just didn't scale anymore. And this CMS didn't come with a test harness and stuff like that. So it's really just a mess if you're trying to maintain it forward. And eventually
I have built so many web applications off of CMSs before I knew better.
Yes.
WordPress, Drupal. I've even done some Joomla. That's like...
Yeah, I did Joomla as well before I did ProcessWire, but only for like small private stuff. But this project eventually, like, it didn't scale anymore and it didn't work anymore. And at some point, I just took the jump and rewrote it in Elixir, essentially, which was quite the experience. Like, previously, like, the CMS is essentially, it has a complete abstraction layer on top of the database, which takes away of a lot of the complexities in a system. And working with a database, but the existing system was working, so essentially I had a bit of time to get it to a state where it was working, and it's still running today in, like, I would say it's like 6-7 years later or something.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly stuff has happened and it's changed since then, but nowadays it's mostly in maintenance mode. So it's continues to be running and doing what it does, but it's no longer in active development.
And you turned into an Elixir developer.
Yes.
Along the way.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, your day job is Elixir development, right?
Yeah, my day job is Elixir development. And funnily enough, like I started out with, like, I'm not the backend person. I got into development really via the doing websites line of thinking. And then nowadays I'm actually working on a nurse job doing really backendy stuff. I hardly have anything to do with the front end anymore. We have like a tiny web UI on the device, but that's about all the web front end stuff I do.
So it's interesting to me that, you know, it's almost like you didn't find Elixir, it found you, right? And then you have this journey that's taking you from like PHP and front end technologies and, you know, moving further and further toward the back end. And it seems like that journey has almost uniquely prepared you to play the role that you're playing now within the community.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helps to have bumped into all the issues that people are asking about in the past. Like, I mean, essentially, the if you're doing like the project that I mentioned before, like I did everything in there. Like I did the front end, I did the back end. I know how HTML works. I know how CSS works. I know that CSS nowadays is much better than it was in the past. So I've seen a lot of developments in things getting better and things improving over time. But I also still don't know the pains of the before times. So it's really interesting to be able to see like how people are approaching stuff nowadays. Having run into issues before means you know a bunch of options you can take, and also like not necessarily just the one option that's documented right now, but maybe also an older option which is still viable. Like Elixir projects usually do very good at being backwards compatible, so you're not necessarily losing all the old functionality as soon as the new one comes around.
That makes all the sense in the world. And yeah, I think it's also interesting that you're approaching this from, you're answering very technical back-end questions, given your background, that's basically taken you through the whole learning cycle. I find that fascinating and extremely helpful. Extremely helpful.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is also like, it's not like I started out doing that way. Like I went through that whole journey myself. Like, when I joined the Elixir community, I was the one asking questions. That's how I learned this stuff. So really sometimes people are really asking questions that I used to ask before. So I know the answer because someone else told it to me. But also one thing I find really interesting is over time, I also found it's much, like in recent days, it's really interesting that I'm answering many, many questions with documentation. So it's really fun if you're just pulling up a piece of documentation because you know where the answer to the question stands and you just paste the link.
That's actually a really good one. Like there is a page where the ecto types are outlined. And I reference that page all the time, and I have some kind of somewhere in the back of my mind, I have a few Google queries stored that help me find it because I never remember where in the Ecto documentation it is, but I know it's there and I know it's a useful page. And if someone has questions about Ecto types, it's like, here's it, all of it. Or like, oh, I actually need to check how handle continue works for the 32nd time. But I know where the documentation for handle continue sits. So I can just go there. And as a beginner, you might not even know handle continue is a thing, but it might be exactly what you need. And just having people guide you to the right thing is usually plenty, at least for kind of self, like motivated seekers and developers. And like what you're saying kind of mirrors my own entry into the Elixir community. Like I haven't done spent as much time in like the forums and stuff. That's kind of too high volume for me. I don't want to spend all that time chatting, but I definitely looked at the like Ecto and Phoenix stuff for a bit. I've been in the Elixir channel on the Slack, but then I settled into the Nerves one because it's kind of low volume comparatively. And I learned a ton in Nerves and got a lot of answers to things in Nerves and figured things out there. And after a while, I noticed, oh, I'm answering questions now because I've seen these things, or I know that like these are stumbling blocks I've already cleared, so I can help. I can take some load off of Frank and Connor and everyone. And I think that's a nice turning point, and also builds your own confidence a little bit, where it's like, yeah, apparently I know something because I can answer this stuff, and I'm very, very confident that I have the right idea.
Yeah, but right idea is actually also a good point. Like one of the benefits I've personally seen, like this discussion type discourse about how to do something. So you don't get just like a single option. Like in many, like in book form or in video form, you get like, okay, I want to teach subject A. So I give you subject A, give you a problem in subject A, and give you a solution in subject A. But in like a more freeform like discussion, you get, okay, person has a problem, but then you get at best multiple people answering of like, okay, these are the steps I would take. These are the solutions I would take. Sometimes there's consensus, sometimes there isn't. And sometimes the consensus is like, sometimes the answers are conflicting even, but you essentially, you get like, not just the solution end of a problem, but the much more important thing in programming, you get the trade-offs being made. Because once you get into two people trying to answer your question and they have contradicting views, they will explain why they are contradicting and why they are contradicting, how they came to this solution. So you're not just learning essentially how to solve the problem, but you're also learning how to get to a solution, which is much more interesting in my mind, because you're essentially teaching someone how to learn by themselves and how to make trade-offs and stuff like that.
I like that quite a lot, actually. Even as an author and somebody who records some of these videos and provides training, I'm often providing a single perspective. And there's room for that, right? But I like the idea of this unfolding book, if you will, that's going to live in a place that's easily searched, easily understood, where you can drill down for more, for options, for approaches, for even a specific option whenever you need it. And I really like this concept. I had a question for you. Based on the many different types of places that you can go for this type of Q&A in Elixir, what are some of your favorite sites and what is uniquely interesting about them that makes them good for the problems, for the questions that you answer there?
It's a good question. I mean, the classic answer would really be the Elixir forum, the Elixir Slack. I'm actually not on the Discord, but I think those are very good as well. To me, it depends a little bit. Like, there's pros and cons to each of those solutions. Like, the Slack has the problem; it's essentially not permanently accessible. It's freeform chat, so stuff is gone really fast. It's not easily searchable. But on the other hand, like, it gives you the much more immediate feedback that you sometimes need if you're working on a problem. Like, I have, like, I did the learning by talking to people via a forum in the past. I did the being active on Slack with Elixir. I've recently been trying to get into Sigmore, and while Sig is a really interesting programming language, I am having a hard time because I don't really find a community where I can like quickly talk to someone, because I don't really have a great framework to get like even small pieces done. Like, I've never worked with a manual memory managed programming language before. So I'm missing a lot of like the smaller pieces. Like, I know how to program. I know in theory how memory management is supposed to work, but like the smaller details and syntax and stuff like that. You sometimes like you're, as soon as you're getting out of the flow, you're out. So essentially, if you don't get an answer in a reasonable time frame, which usually is the, if you're posting to a forum or something, it takes a while till you get an answer. And that will get you unstuck for like a tiny problem, and you invest 10 more minutes and you're stuck at the next tiny problem. So there's essentially the, I like the immediacy for certain kinds of conversations on Slack, but I also like the more rounded and more well thought out answers in the Elixir forum. So it's, yeah, I can't say like which is my favorite, but all of them.
Are you saying there are trade-offs?
There are.
Upsetting. Actually, that Sig thing mirrors my experience like trying to poke about with C recently. It's like, yeah, okay, where's the C community at? Where do you do C? Where do you learn C? Who do you talk to about C? It's like, yeah, there's not clang.org and their Slack and their forum as far as I'm aware. And I ended up to like, I'm in a community for Swedish developers, or it's centered around a Swedish software podcast, and just like, oh, I know there's people doing C in here, so I'm gonna throw questions out, and then people will filter in, because it's a common enough language and people do want to help you get into it. And like, but I had to essentially use a general purpose community and trust that I would get some support, because I have no idea where I would go to learn it otherwise.
Swedish, so much seeking Swedish, if you will.
Ouch. Yeah, and I think some communities are really good about like building those like building discussions, forums, community spaces, and some don't prioritize that. I think Erlang historically hasn't had much of that. It's been a kind of unusual shop, and like there's been mailing lists, so the people that are really into it, they're there and they know where to find it, much like Linux kernel development. Well, you're tracking the mailing lists, right? Sure. Yes. There's no Linux kernel forum, but there are mailing lists.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I echo this conversation as somebody who's written about other programming languages and even tried to take Grokcio in that direction. It's finding that community where all of that happens, and happens both in real time and in slow time, right? For that trade-off of discoverability versus like immediacy. Those are really important things. And for me, actually continuing to do the types of work that are, write the types of articles that eventually turned into 7 languages in 7 weeks, it basically killed me not to have those kind of immediate communities in one place and consolidated in a way that's kind of that kind of fits my aging flow, right? It's like, I want my flow my way. I don't want it your way. And yeah, so having that in the Elixir community has basically spoiled me. It's a gift to be able to have that community and the types of people that support both these types of interactions. But I think it's also necessary for a language to grow in as many directions as Elixir has, right? So we have this kind of explosive growth happening right now in a couple of different places. It seems like Nerves is perennially in that space. It seems like LiveView is in that space. It seems like NX is in that space. And now that community is far enough along, it seems like Bumblebee is in that space. And we've been really, really fortunate that these communities and the culture that's been built around Elixir has kind of come along with these other communities as well.
Yeah, and I would say, especially for those new areas where we grow, it's really important to have that as well. Because, like, I don't think NX would have grown as explosively if they wouldn't have had people actually telling other people who are trying to use it, okay, that's the stuff you need to look at. That's how you do things. Especially in the beginning, when there's rough edges everywhere, you just can't expect someone to pick that up without having some guidance.
Yeah, use this gist and you need to be on this PR. It hasn't been merged yet, but reference this PR instead of hex. And I have an example in this gist, and over here there's some gotchas, so be aware of those. Like, the machine learning channel on the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation Slack is how you do machine learning in Elixir. That's what drives all of it. There's an NX channel on the Elixir Slack, not as active. And like this variety of community spaces, like when you're on the kind of forward edge, just the fact that there are enthusiasts out there trying these things, figuring out, this is how you solve that pain point. This is how you get past that obstacle. This is something you mentioned as I reached out before this conversation, that some things will not be covered by documentation. And like, you've been active in Nerves, you've been active in Phoenix, you know, I bet the pain of kind of mashing Nerves and Phoenix together. It is not the hardest thing in the world, but it's annoying. And like, the documentation can't fully easily show you. You're going to run into weird things. You're going to mess up probably. And then it's like, okay, I want to do Nerves, I want to do Phoenix, and I want to do an X. Who knows what I can do? And it's going to take a minute.
There's certainly a lot of complexity in there. I also find it really interesting, because I also don't, like, I acknowledge the downfalls where just documentation can break down, but on the other hand, I also don't think that documentation should aim for documenting every use case that's out there. So really, it's more a matter of like, okay, how can we give enough information and enough context for someone to grasp what is needed to use it in a different use case? And to a degree, that also comes back to the same point that I made earlier before, like, with classical education in video or in book form, yes, it's like you're teaching like one point, but that's not bad, because the goal is a whole different thing. You're trying to get someone to know a solution to something. You're not trying to get them to a place where they can make tough decisions. And also, the students might not actually already be in a place where they can already make the decisions. So it's just a different use case. But to circle this back to the documentation standpoint, like, there's a bunch of blog posts that I have written just because a lot of people have asked for them. Like, I think one of my most like popular blog posts is the blog post on how to do one-to-many forms with Phoenix and change sets. That's a problem that I have been dealing with since I started my first Elixir project. And I wrote a blog post, I think, like 2 years ago or something. Like, I published the blog post basically like a month before Chris introduced the new approach with Ecto just getting a deleted and a sorted value as well. And it's like, okay, yeah, fine. Nobody needs my solution anymore. But yeah, it's still interesting because the blog post is, even though the solution part is now, there's no two solutions out there. My blog post is still often, I see it on the forum and stuff when other people are posting my blog post to people answering about those kinds of forms. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I just put enough context and information about the trade-offs that are involved into the blog post. So it's still useful, even though it's no longer the most straightforward solution.
That's really interesting. I mean, and you could see if everyone could see the studio view, you would see my head and Lars's head bobbing like bobblehead dogs, right? Like nod. And so strongly agreeing with that idea. And what it means is that Elixir has this whole a holistic community where you can go to Elixir Lang to kind of get that first tutorial, and then you could start to experiment with things and get things installed. And when you're frustrated in learning, you have the live book that you can kind of start to work with things in an iterative way. And then you have kind of the books where you can go and absorb the core abstractions and even the trainings that we do at Gracio or the video courses, where you can kind of see, well, maybe I'm an object-oriented developer and I don't know how to connect my code together. Maybe you have some designs and abstractions that you can kind of get your head around, like a behavior and how that relates to OTP and the inversion of control that's happening in OTP and in live view. And then when you start to attack more serious problems, when you get off of that trivial path to something more advanced, you have the places with a variety of searchable contexts, and you also have the places that you can go to get unstuck. And I don't know if many languages, especially functional languages, have that kind of depth right now. And that's why I love Elixir.
Yeah, I think one of the key pieces there is also like the, now I'm going out and doing a real project, because in my opinion, you can have all the experience from classic book and video content about a problem. As soon as you start to implement that slightly differently, you'll get into problems and you run into things which are not covered by the video or which are not covered by the book. That's just the nature of like, okay, I'm doing it a little bit differently now. And that's also the reason why I said like documentation can't cover everything. At a certain point, you need to start making your own investigations, trying out things. You need to look into different solutions. You need to figure out like what could be a solution, asking people of like, okay, what is their experience as just a shortcut to figuring out possible solutions. And then you need to start making trade-offs. That's essentially the point where you just, now I have information, but eventually I need to do something with that information and need to decide like, okay, how do I want to do that in my own project? What's the code I'll write down in this file?
Yeah, I think I've run into that a number of times throughout my career. Like, oh, the first time I wanted to get into Linux wasn't that I couldn't read through the documentation of a Linux distro and get it set up, but it was a lot of stuff to learn and a lot of decisions to make to get started with desktop Linux at that time. And I had the fortune of having someone I could reach out to and go, hey, could you get me started on Linux? And I figured because the person is into Linux, they are also into other people getting into Linux. And he gave me a good boost straight into Slackware at the time. And then similarly, when I started using Python and Django, and it was like, yeah, okay, this tutorial is great. The Django tutorial is really good. I got plenty started. And then I wanted to do like 12 kind of similar models of the same thing, but just slightly different. And I did not want to repeat all these relationships and yada, yada, yada. So suddenly I was heading off into a kind of advanced topic or a lot of grunt work. And I don't like grunt work. So I reached out to a Python developer I knew that I knew had poked around with Django. And he came over and helped me build weird factory classes and stuff that did crimes to save me a bunch of work. And that, like, everyone needs that at times, because pushing through on your own is just a ton of work. There are moments when you need to push through on your own. Like when I was implementing ID3 specification stuff, and it was like, there's really no one to ask. There's no good test suites. There's a spec, and it's sometimes vague. And you just need to test this with real things and see if it works and fight through it. But very often you can boost through it. And a forum can really, really do that for you if you don't have like a personal network that can do it. And the chance of having a personal network in Elixir without having engaged with the community is very small. Like, yeah, after you engage with the community, actually one of the network reasons. Grows. But
I guess that's also one of the reasons why this was such a important thing for my career path, because for the most part, I've been working on my own on software projects only for essentially the last three years. I've been actually working in a team. Before that, I did most of my work on my own. So there is no, I ask my senior dev who is above me, or I ask another coworker or something. So you really need to find someone who can help you out with the questions that you have outside of your own work.
Yeah, and I think our community is a little bit special there as well, because Erlang and like the backdrop of Erlang and the OG Erlang folks and just like Erlang's reputation for distributed systems meant that there were some deep nerds that just jumped on Elixir or were already there with the beam. And that makes the ceiling of this community, like you were talking about, Bruce, with like, yeah, early days, you try to get some stuff done, you go through a course, yada, yada, yada. At the same time, there are people talking about distributed systems and like consensus and Raft and yada, 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 because that's very much in the DNA of the runtime and the platform and the systems we build on. But no one can start there. Yeah. But the heights you can go to and like the width you can cover in this ecosystem is kind of absurd. And if you compare that to what you'll experience if, let's say, you dive deep in the WordPress community, this is not a slam on the WordPress community. It is a community for people that mostly build websites and occasionally web apps. And like the most deep, knowledgeable people in the WordPress ecosystem are usually deep into like building extensions and plugins and like probably selling some plugins and stuff. Usually not deep into distributed systems, because that's not in the WordPress DNA. Some might be, but it's not in the WordPress DNA.
Yeah, I agree with that so much for a couple of reasons, right? So first, that overall breadth that is represented by the Elixir ecosystem, right? That you can have, that Jose is already talking about things like let and variables that can be rebinded. Why? Because it makes code easier to understand for people from, you know, at least part of our heritage. And yet you can build some of these algorithms for distributed systems or machine learning, where we're even, you know, ripping out the core concepts of the language, like what's an int, what's a def, right? You know, it's def int. But all of that kind of falls apart where if you can't learn the basics and the documentation, you can't get started. If you can't learn the core abstractions from, I don't know, however you get them, mentorship or books or video courses or whatever, it all kind of falls apart. And if you can't find if you can't take that next step, then with the documentation and with the whole support system that's built around this language, you can't have that depth, Lars. It doesn't work. It's the house of cards comes down. And I mean, it's really cool that we have Benjamin here to talk about this, because it's a hidden and thankless part of the community very often.
Yeah, and I would also say that the important part is, I wouldn't even constrain this to just getting into the language. I would say the same applies in every level you're at. Like, there's still conversations where I would say, okay, there's people who know more about this. There's stuff I haven't worked on my own. You can always learn stuff. And like, if I think back when I started with Elixir, like as Lars said, there's people talking about distributed problems in the Elixir and Erlang communities. And they're doing that since Elixir started. Like, I was getting into Elixir doing barely Phoenix, and I'm at the same time exposed to people talking about distributed problems, which at the time I didn't care for at all. But eventually you'll get just a good understanding about things that you just observed and essentially learned by osmosis, by just being there. And then you can use it in your work. Like, essentially my first actual multi-server Elixir application was like at my current contracting job, like a year and a half ago. It's not like I first got into distributed problems a year and a half ago. I already knew what the trade-offs were and what I needed to make sure that works.
That's really cool. And we see the same at every level, right? Like, even on the project teams, there are people on the Phoenix team, when it was time to build presence, they said, "Whoa, that's a complicated area." Because what happens if this network is fragmented and you don't have visibility across all elements of the network? Well, this is how you solve that distributed problem. They rolled up their sleeves and got to work. And there were other people on the team that didn't need to know, right? So even on the implementation team, there's the whole gamut of skills, from beginners helping with documentation to people who know how to handle a fragmented network with presence.
Yeah. And like this type of community, like just being part of, whether you speak into the community or not, whether you join discussions or whether you just lurk, there are so many people that are just kind of following the community, which I think is like perfectly reasonable. If you don't feel that you need to ask questions, then that's fine. I would suggest if you feel like you shouldn't ask questions, that's the wrong idea. Everyone should try and ask questions if they feel the need. But like, I'm super comfortable with Elixir and Phoenix overall. I don't often run into like fundamental things about the libraries and frameworks that I can't figure out, except in the machine learning end and sort of that leading edge where I'm completely lost half the time. But there's so much stuff I don't know, and that I know I don't know, where it's just like, having access to the community can help me short circuit a lot of work. Just going, hey, does anyone know a library that's really good at this? Or has anyone solved this? Or has anyone tried an approach to this? And you get some discussion that really points you in the directions you need it. Sometimes it just confirms that, like, yeah, you've mapped the terrain correctly. You found all the blog posts that are relevant. All right, fair enough. But many times people will point you to, like, oh, there's this old Erlang library that solved this back in the 90s, and it still works, so use that. Or there might be like a very niche Elixir library, or someone goes, hey, I saw that, it's not on Hex yet, but here. you'll find all kinds, and that is not something that documentation can cover. Hex can't cover. It's just like human networks are necessary to sometimes access certain information, and like going to conferences will also do this for you to some extent. Like you'll discover things you had no idea existed. And like if conversations were only happening in Slack, I think that would be a big disadvantage. And unfortunately, like Twitter is not what it was. It was a pretty good glue for this community, and I think we're suffering a little bit from what has happened with Twitter. Like fragmentation is pretty much hitting everywhere in tech because of this. So, but like overall, in there, I think the Elixir forum is kind of special because most technical communities used to use Stack Overflow, and so many probably still do, but like rely on answers being available at Stack Overflow. And Stack Overflow does not build community in that way. You don't see the same person answer questions on Stack Overflow in the way that you see the same person answer questions in the Elixir forum. And you don't see the same type of discussions, because discussions are not what Stack Overflow is for, as people will very much tell you.
Yeah,
so you'll search for Elixir and you'll end up in the forum. And you'll end up in the forum, and that means you will meet the community and you will see things that you wouldn't run into otherwise. Actually, that's one of the big upsides of a bunch of old PHP projects. They all had communities, like they all had forums. Like I spent many years in the Drupal community. I didn't go as deep as I've done in Elixir, but like Drupal was very approachable.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same for me with ProcessWire, which is like, there's like, let's say maybe 100 people using it, but like these 100 people, like actively using it, but these 100 people are all on forums.
Yeah. All right. I think we are approaching our time. Is there anything that you would like to bring up specifically around, like, I will say the work you've done in the Elixir community. I know it's unpaid community labor, but it's certainly work. Or anything around how people, like if you have recommendations for people wanting to learn more about Elixir and how your journey can inform that, I'm sure people will be all ears.
Is there anything, any of your own projects that you're particularly excited about and you'd like to plug? Your blog, your social media?
Yeah, so in terms of plugging my own stuff, it's certainly my my website, cobrakai.de, and the blog is on there. That's certainly a good resource to get in touch with me. Generally also, like, you can always get in touch with me on the forum or on Slack, for sure. In terms of projects, not that much right now. Like, at least not from where I'm working on right now. I actually have one written down in my notes that I quickly look into. We talked a bunch about documentation, and like I think one of those things which really helped me in my learning journey was the fact, like, we have really great documentation in Elixir, and one of the things that I have used for ages is the Dash Mac app, which has native integration with Hex to just pull documentation on a local computer. I at one point tried to build a XDocs formatter which can just spit out DocSet files, which you can use with Dash, but also the much more important part is, like, Dash is a paid product, and it's Mac only, but there's a program that's called Seal, which implements the same functionality in a free Windows and Linux app. But the problem is it doesn't have integration with Hex, so essentially there's currently no way to get actual Elixir documentation into that app. So that's something I have been working on and off, more off than on, trying to get it running, because there's an open standard, quote unquote open. Like the standard is defined by the as far as I know by the developer behind Dash, but it's open because he also wants like programming languages to be able to provide for his product. There's an open spec for that, and you can implement that. And I think I got the doc sets running, but there's also a spec for like, how do you provide different versions and updates and stuff like that via an HTTP API? And that stuff I haven't gotten running on Seal before. And yeah, it's also a little hard to just debug a Windows application where you just don't get any insights of what's wrong.
It's not showing up. Congratulations. Yep.
It tells me computer doesn't want to.
Yeah. I haven't tried using like Dash and all those. I know of them, and it seems like a really smart move. I think at the time they kind of turned up in force, I was not spending a ton of time in reference documentation. And since I joined the Elixir community, because the reference documentation is really, really good, I spend almost all of my time on Hexdocs.
Yeah, I mean, I even have it on a global shortcut. Like, I press Control S and just start typing what I'm looking for, and I find it. That's one of the reasons why I can pull up links so quick.
That's productivity hacks for being a community contributor. I like it. Final wrap up thing. The name Lost Cobra Kai, that implies a certain Karate Kid association.
Yeah, that's actually quite funny, because that wasn't part of the how I got to that name. At the time when I was choosing that name, I actually was a lot into the songs of Lost Prophets. Sadly, they're no longer like a great band to listen to, given their recent news about their singer. Like, probably not as recent anymore. But yeah, at the time I listened to a lot of Lost Prophets, and they had a song called Cobra Kai, and I just mushed them together and had a name for being online.
Ah. So do you or do you not have an opinion on the Cobra Kai series, I guess, on Netflix?
I haven't watched it, so I don't.
I rather enjoyed it. It's a very weird sequel to the Karate Kid movies, and they do a lot of reference work. So if you enjoyed, if you enjoy nostalgia and you're nostalgic about Karate Kid, I would recommend giving the first few episodes a whirl. It's an unusual show. That's me channeling Meryl for a bit to get pop culture into the show. But we need to wrap up. Thank you so much, Benjamin, for coming on. Thank you, Bruce,
for
tagging along. And thank you to our sponsors, Underjord and Groxio, you know, career fuel for programmers. And hope you join us next time on Beam Radio.